Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, your weekly mix of science and music. This week, we'll be talking about the amazing history of the Landsat satellites and the exciting new Landsat Data Continuity Mission, which is set for launch this February 11th. We'll also talk to Deborah Bird about stargazing into our local spiral arm, the Orion Arm. Plus, Song of the Week is by Bel Air. Here's your scientist soundbite.
This view of Antarctica from space, where you could see just gorgeous shades of blue and white and deep blue ocean, it was stunning.
That's NASA glaciologist Robert Binshadler speaking about the mosaic of images of Antarctica taken by Landsat satellites. More about Landsat in a few, but first, Science News of the Week with Emily Howard. Welcome, Emily.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Astronomers have identified a new structure in the Milky Way. It's a long tendril of dust and gas that they're calling a bone. This is the first time we've seen such a delicate piece of the galactic skeleton, says lead author Alyssa Goodman of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. Goodman presented the discovery this week in a press conference at a meeting of the American Astronomical Society.
The nighttime twinkling of fireflies has inspired scientists. Researchers from Belgium, France, and Canada studied the internal structure of the organs on the bioluminescent insect's abdomen that flash to attract mates. The scientists identified an unexpected pattern of jagged scales that enhance the insect's glow and applied that knowledge to LED design to create an LED overlayer. The overlayer increased LED light by up to 55%, and it could be easily tailored to existing design to help humans light up the night while using less energy. The work is published in a pair of papers this week in the Optical Society's journal, Optics Express, biomimicry at its best.
An international team of researchers has identified a new concern about deforestation in the Amazon rainforest, a troubling loss in the diversity among the microbial organisms in the soil. The group sampled a 100 square kilometer area, about 38 square miles in Brazil, where rainforest has been converted to agricultural use. Scientists worry that the loss of genetic variation in bacteria across the converted forest could reduce ecosystem resilience.
Australia experienced record-breaking heat for the first week of January 2013. The record-breaking high temperatures are expected to continue for the upcoming week as temperatures increase over 37 degrees Celsius, which is over 100 degrees Fahrenheit. Meanwhile, the dry conditions are also responsible for several wildfires that are developing across the country. A 40-year-old record was broken on December 7th when the average maximum daily temperature for Australia was set at 40.33 degrees Celsius, or around 105 degrees Fahrenheit. That's Science News of the Week. This week's Song of the Week is by Bel Air. It's off their most recent release, Resonating Symphony. This song is called Lightning on the Beach.
Thank you.
That was Lightning on the Beach by Bel Air. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. The Landsat series of Earth-observing satellites has created an unparalleled record of Earth's changing landscapes. In orbit since 1972, the series of satellites has captured millions of thermal and optical images from space of Earth's surface. This information is used by scientists to see how Earth's landscape has changed over time. Landsat 5 was launched in 1984, and it was originally engineered with a 3-year mission in mind. It has now been in orbit and sending back valuable information for 29 years. Early this year, NASA has announced that it will decommission Landsat 5, and it will launch the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, or LDCM. EarthSky's Jorge Salazar spoke with several scientists about how they use Landsat data. Here's satellite researcher Curtis Woodcock.
The Landsat series of satellites has been absolutely fantastic, and this historical archive is really the key to understanding how forests are changing, because even though a lot of the imagery is yet to be analyzed or studied, it's available because it was collected. Somebody had the foresight in the past to collect global data that we can use now in the present time.
And this data, you say, has been collected since 1972, and it's still important for scientists now.
Oh, extremely important. I would argue that archive of data that, in essence, is a record of what's happened on the surface of the Earth may be the most valuable environmental data record that we have.
Here's NASA glaciologist Robert Binshadler speaking about Landsat images taken from space of Antarctica, arranged in a full-color, high-definition mosaic.
This view of Antarctica from space, where you could see just gorgeous shades of blue and white and deep blue ocean, it was stunning.
Now, I'd like to speak with you about the Landsat image mosaic of Antarctica. LIMA shows an amazingly detailed view of the entire frozen continent. How would you describe LIMA?
Well, the way I would describe LIMA is that it is the first true-color, high-definition view of Antarctica.
Tell us more about some of the science that is contained in this.
Well, one of the most fascinating pieces of science that has been done with LIMA so far, in my opinion, was one that was totally unexpected. And this was one where they used the fact that it is in true color to assess where the penguin colonies, where the rookeries, where penguins live, are located. And the way they did it was there's a unique spectral signature, a certain color to the guano, the penguin poo, if you will, that's deposited on the ice. So the fact that that LIMA provided them true color and high resolution allowed them to assess where penguins were nesting and where they were not.
Maybe you could give us a big picture here of what was gained in doing this and why it's different than what scientists knew before this Landsat image mosaic of Antarctica was put together.
Well, I think the fact that LIMA is in true color is particularly important because it gives scientists an early view of any area of the continent. It's a huge continent, and most of it still remains unexplored in any sort of detail. So if you're a geologist wanting to explore a particular mountain range, you're going to want to look at that mountain range before you go. So LIMA, as much as anything for that kind of planning, serves as a unique base map. And so now we have the entire continent mapped in a consistent and standard way. And then it also shows, because it's in such high detail, particular features on the surface that a glaciologist such as myself can interpret to tell us about the ice sheet, where it's going fast, where it's going slow, which direction it's going. So there's just a variety of ways that such a unique data set can be used by scientists. I can't remember who it was that said, you know, a good picture is worth 1,000 words. And it's true that in order to communicate our science, Landsat has a unique place that we can show people what's happening. We can see cities expand. In the polar regions, we can see these changes where nobody is even around to observe them. And for studying changes on this Earth and being able to interpret the causes of those changes, you want as long a time record as possible. And so Landsat has provided that.
Research scientist Martha Anderson speaking with Jorge Salazar about using Landsat to monitor water usage from space.
We know that fresh water availability is going to become an increasingly critical issue worldwide, so we really have to be able to map water use at the scale that water is being used. And Landsat really is the only satellite system currently operating that can provide us routinely and globally thermal information at this critical spatial scale.
Now, what do you mean by evapotranspiration, and why is it important to measure evapotranspiration rates from space?
Well, evapotranspiration, or ET, as we call it for short, it describes the exchange of water vapor between the land surface and the atmosphere, and it's made up of all the water that's evaporated off of surfaces, like the soil surface, leaf surfaces, and all water that's used by plants in the process of photosynthesis, and that's the transpiration component. So it's evaporation plus transpiration.
How does Landsat, in orbit around Earth, see how water is being used on an agricultural field?
Well, Landsat has a number of imaging systems, and one of them collects radiation that is in the thermal waveband. Those are wavelengths that are longer than our eyes can see. All objects emit this kind of thermal radiation. The hotter the object, the stronger the thermal emission. So using these thermal waveband systems, we can map out the temperature of the land surface remotely. With Landsat, we can do this mapping at fine enough spatial resolution that we can detect temperature differences between different fields, agricultural fields, and this is very useful. Crops that are evaporating water with very high rate of ET tend to be cooler because the evaporation is cooling down the surface.
How is the water use information that Landsat collects being used?
It really is being used operationally now, and particularly in the western states where kind of water resources are getting increasingly tight and they're being depleted sometimes at an unsustainable rate. So in Idaho, for example, the water resource managers and the water management districts are using Landsat ET to see if individual irrigators in the irrigation districts are complying with their allocated water rights or if they're using more water than they should be. And they can tell that by looking at time sequences of Landsat ET data. The farmers can use this information also to figure out which fields need to be irrigated and by how much they need to be irrigated. We can also study kind of the trade-offs in water use between different users. For example, in some parts of the West, you have irrigation occurring next to a stream that's supporting some important habitat, salmon spawning grounds, for example. We can use the Landsat ET to see how much the irrigated agriculture may be influencing the stream flow in these critical ecosystems.
Landsat's 40-year legacy continues on February 11th, 2013, as the Landsat Data Continuity Mission, or LDCM, prepares for launch. Here's Jim Irons, principal scientist, talking about LDCM.
The LDCM will continue the monitoring of the global land surface begun by Landsat 1 40 years ago. The LDCM will extend and improve upon the Landsat record of landscape change. The resulting observations and information will be critical to managing increasing demands on land resources and preparing for inevitable changes to the global land surface. LDCM will be the best Landsat satellite launched to date, the best Landsat satellite ever, in terms of the quality and quantity of the data collected by the LDCM sensors. The Operational Land Imager, the OLI, and the Thermal Infrared Sensor, TIRS, both employ technological advances that will make the observations more sensitive to variation of land cover across the landscape and more sensitive to changes in the land surface over time. I do not think it hyperbole to suggest that all 7 billion of us will benefit from the results of the Landsat Data Continuity Mission.
Landsat Data Continuity Mission, set for launch February 11th. Watch the launch live at nasa.gov. You can see some amazing images from Landsat satellites at earthsky.org and hear more interviews with scientists using Landsat data. EarthSky is a clear voice for science. You're listening to EarthSky 22. You can find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird is here to talk about the Milky Way and its spiral arms. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Mike. The Milky Way galaxy. So many people know that we live in a giant island of stars called the Milky Way, one of billions of such star islands in the universe. Mm-hmm. And our Milky Way is considered to be a spiral galaxy. So it has these beautiful, graceful, winding spiral arms, giving the whole galaxy kind of a pinwheel shape.
Okay. I've heard you talk about the spiral galaxy as a sort of a record player before, like a turntable.
Right, because it's flat. It's flat, like an old phonograph record. So it's flat and round and large. It's thought to be maybe 100,000 light years across. And we live inside that flat part of the galaxy. So when we look in our sky, we can see the galaxy at different times of years looking, you know, different ways because of our night sky facing out in different directions at different times of year.
Yeah, and right now it seems like the stars are especially bright. Is there what's the reason for that?
Well, so think about what happens in the months of, say, June, July, and August. So that's the summer months for us in the Northern Hemisphere. At that time of year, our evening sky is looking toward the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And when we look toward the center of the galaxy, we're located about 25,000 light years out from the center. And as I said, the galaxy is about 100,000 light years across. So when we're looking toward the center of the galaxy, we're looking through that flat disk of the galaxy across about 75 light years of Milky Way. Mm-hmm. Whereas at the opposite time of year, say, you know, December, January, February, where we are right now, our evening sky is looking the opposite way. We're looking opposite the center of the galaxy. So we're looking only across 25,000 light years of space until we get to the end of the galaxy. So in this time of year, so the Northern Hemisphere winter sky, you mentioned that the stars look brighter, and that's true. The stars do look brighter at this time of year. And people say, oh, it has to do with the cold, and it has to do with humidity or lack of humidity and all these different things. But in fact, if you went to the southern hemisphere, you'd see those same stars, and they would still look brighter, even though it's summer right now in the southern hemisphere. So what's the reason for that? And the reason for that has to do with the spiral arms of the Milky Way. At this time of year, we're looking away from the center of the galaxy, but we're actually looking into the spiral arm of the galaxy that contains our own sun. So we're looking at our own cosmic neighborhood of sorts. And some of the brightest stars in the sky, in the Northern Hemisphere winter sky, or the Southern Hemisphere summer sky, for example, the constellation Orion, which is a very famous constellation, and many people know it because it has many bright stars. And it has these three prominent belt stars, the belt of Orion, three stars in a short, straight row on the sky that if you go out tonight in the evening and pick out any pattern in the sky, you're sure to pick out that pattern because it's just so prominent and so easy to see. So those stars, those bright stars of Orion, are also residents of our local spiral arm. And that's why they look so bright, because they're relatively close to us.
Cool. So if we look out at Orion's belt, we're looking into the spiral arm.
That's right. So a couple things to notice. When you look out in the evening sky, you'll notice there's a bunch of bright stars there. And that, no matter where you are on Earth, that's going to be true. And those stars are members of our own spiral arm, the Orion arm of the galaxy. Our Orion arm of the galaxy is a minor spiral arm. The whole galaxy is 100,000 light years across. Our little spiral arm is maybe only 10,000 light years long and maybe only 3,500 or so light years thick. So we're in this little kind of cozy neighborhood here in the Milky Way galaxy. So, you know, just notice the bright stars that are up in the evening and think about the fact that we live in a cool spiral arm of the Milky Way, the Orion arm.
I will, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird. And that's our show. Thanks for joining us. This week's show was recorded in Earth Sky's studio in Austin, Texas. For more information about the music or the science you heard, visit earthsky.org. I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists to my